listening to Football in Europe, the weekly podcast covering the game across the continent.
Managers are the talk of European football this week. Pep Guardiola's leaving Bayern at the end of the season, and they confirm Carlo Ancelotti will replace him. Alongside me today is Chris Parrott. Chris, what else are we talking about this week?
Well, we ask what next for another big head coach, Jose Mourinho, of course. It's another decimer for Real Madrid. Paris Saint-Germain continue their stroll to the title, and find out which former Middlesbrough man celebrated scoring with a beer in Italy.
We'll be speaking to BT Sport Archie Rintat about the changes at Bayern, and we'll hear from Belgrade journalist Sonja Nikcevic about Liverpool's reported new signing.
Grujić has been the standout player for Red Star in what has been an outstanding season for the club. And he can play in any of the midfield roles, really, but is actually a defensive midfielder more than anything else.
Is Ronaldinho off to Switzerland? What is Cristiano Ronaldo's latest business venture? All these questions will be answered in episode 18 of our podcast.
This is Football in Europe.
I'm Rob Daly. Thanks for downloading the show, as always, and a big thanks to those of you who left us a review on iTunes this week, including Ian Todd, Rob Langham, and MaxFin01. Keep those coming in on iTunes. It really helps us stay in the sports charts. Chris, where were you at the weekend?
I was at Old Trafford, United against Norwich.
Did you, as an Ipswich fan, hate seeing a load of Norwich fans? Celebrating.
Not just that, because obviously you leave later than most fans. I was stuck on a tram back to Piccadilly with a lot of happy canaries, and
didn't start singing?
I was close to
Ipswich tune,
and also we'd lost to Derby, so I just thought, get your head down. But it was horrible. Just thinking, maybe it could have been us if we'd beaten them in the playoffs.
So, but what about the train back? Was there any? Because the train back must have been full of Norwich fans.
It is a party train back, and on this occasion, we pulled into Stoke, and Palace had played Stoke away, so you already had a full train.
Oh, and Palace got a late winner too.
So there was about 50, should we say, inebriated supporters who got on. But also, I spotted that the Palace first team got on as well. So they got the train back to London because it's only an hour and a half from Stoke.
Keeping it real.
What I spotted, and I told my new mates on the train, because I actually spoke to someone outside of London, so I thought, let's actually have a conversation. Chong Yong Lee, who got the winner, was sat three rows away from us. The rest of the squad went in first class in the next carriage. He sat in normal class.
What?
No idea why. It got better because, okay, they were hammered, these Palace fans. And they were like swaying and singing. But the woman clearly didn't know what had happened on the loudspeaker and said, it's too busy. First class is a free-for-all, essentially. So these Palace fans all stumbled down. Suddenly were met with the entire Crystal Palace first. Because then message got, they all started running back to their other mates, being like, the whole Palace team's here. I've got a selfie with Punchin, like grown men.
Yeah.
And absolute pandemonium. Apart from Chong Yong Lee, of course, who maybe knew what was going to happen, they all just walked past him.
Oh, so they didn't even see him in standard
class? No idea that he was sitting in standard class.
Because you were at the Man United game. Let's talk about Martial very quickly. Because he won the European Golden Boy Award.
Yeah, it was really weird. I didn't know it was going to be... one of those things just pitched. I was like, oh, that's what we were talking about, the Golden Boy.
He got presented with it.
He is one heck of a talent.
Yeah. United have done all right there, probably. Jose Mourinho as well, leaving Chelsea. So with him linked with a number of European clubs, we asked you, where do you think he's going to end up next? Benny says the only other place he's loved is at Inter. I'm sure Porto fans wouldn't mind having him back. Jonathan Stephen reckons Paris Saint-Germain next. Jamie Garwood says he should go where he should have ended up anyway, Old Trafford, in the first place. Stuart believes many boards are actually going to steer clear of Mourinho because of his off-the-field behaviour, and obviously he had his tricky times at Chelsea this year. And Jamie Rojo-Ho says he's going to Bramall Lane. Believes he'll get the best out of Ryan Flynn and Dean Hammond.
I think Nigel Adkins is there. What's wrong with him?
I don't know, yeah.
Who needs... Mourinho, we've got our physio. That's the chant about Adkins, isn't it?
So you spoke to Mourinho earlier in the season, back in October. Did you get a sense at the time that he knew things were unravelling at Stamford Bridge?
Not really. It seemed to come very quickly, didn't it? Absolutely no surprise that they sacked him. They looked like a struggling team against Leicester. Via his agent, who's a very powerful man, has come out and said he's not looking for a sabbatical. He doesn't want a break. He did look tired, let's be honest, by the end. He looked... And whether he is or isn't, I think the press seem to think that he is. And I just think if he went anywhere now, immediately, I don't know. I think he needs to go away, have 3-4 months off, whatever it is.
Well, I tell you, he was at that Brighton-Middlesbrough game, wasn't he?
He was,
and
yeah.
And obviously there's a connection there with Middlesbrough and Ita Karenka, but you get the sense that that was, I'm not hiding, I'm not going into hiding, I'm out there.
Yeah, definitely.
So where do you think next? I mean, we had those tweets in, where do you think he's going to go?
Do you know what? I'm going to go left field. I just wonder, and the current coach is doing a brilliant job, we'll speak about them in a bit, Paris Saint-Germain in the summer.
You told us last week Laurent Blanc's getting a new deal.
Yeah, but this is Paris Saint-Germain. So we won't know how their season goes until the Champions League knockout.
That's
rounds,
true.
Yeah?
That defines their season.
That defines their season. So if they don't win it this season, which they might win it this season, if they played Chelsea tomorrow, they'd beat them. If they don't win it, all of a sudden, that is their stated aim. Ever since the money came in, we want to win the Champions League.
Or at least get to the semi-finals or break the duck that the quarter-finals is furthest they've got, I think.
Yeah,
or
they got to the semis once in the 90s. When
New generation
New generation. So I just wonder if English clubs don't fancy Mourinho, maybe he goes to Paris Saint-Germain. He is a serial winner, okay, this third season syndrome. But if he went to Paris Saint-Germain, would you consider them as Champions League challengers if they're not already? Mm. Definitely. He's already won it twice. I think he could go there. He doesn't need to build anything there. He can go there, literally pick up the players and win.
This is Football in Europe, Bundesliga Roundup.
Joining us now is BT Sports' Archie Rintat and German football expert as well. Archie, thanks for coming on again.
Hi there, Rob. Absolute pleasure.
So, Archie, at the weekend, Bayern beat Hannover by 1-0, and Michael Fronsek, the Hannover head coach, has now resigned. But everyone's talking about the manager in the other dugout, Pep Guardiola. So why is he leaving Bayern?
Well, his contract was only due to run for 3 years, so it's no real surprise in that regard. He is merely fulfilling his contract, but there had been hopes from Bayern Munich's end that he would indeed extend for at least another year. He is a very intense individual and someone who it takes a lot out of him to do this sort of job. And I think that with some of the battles that he's had to face in terms of getting the control that he likes, and I mean, there's been envy over how much control he's managed to wield in a club of Bayern Munich's size. But I think that that's perhaps a few of these arguments, particularly with, you may remember back in April of 2015, earlier this year, the club doctor who'd been there for absolutely ages, Hans Müller-Wohlfahrt, resigned over an argument with Pep. And indeed, in the last few weeks, there's also been friction between him and the club's medical staff over the immense amount of injuries. I don't think that is the one sole reason. I just think that it epitomises one of the probably few factors which is leading to Pep going.
We've had tweets in from people about Guardiola and about where they think he'll go next. La Liga Gav says, surely he'll go to City. He's got lots of friends there. SBH33 says, Guardiola the romantic will want Manchester United as a prospect. But Charlie asks, and we wanted to ask you this as well, Archie, how will Pep leaving affect Bayern essentially for the rest of the season?
If you look at the last time that Bayern Munich announced a coaching change midway through a season, it didn't end too badly, namely by them having the greatest season in their history as they went on to win the treble. Is it going to happen again? You wouldn't actually bet against it, given the position that they're in both the Bundesliga, 8 points clear of Borussia Dortmund at the winter break, into the quarterfinals of the DFB Cup, and in the Champions League. They've got a very tough tie against Juventus, but you feel that it might just give the players that edge in the same way that it did in 2013, where it just kind of pushes them on that little bit further. And I think that there is an immense amount of respect within Bayern Munich for the work that Pep Guardiola has done, and particularly the players who I think perhaps were a little bit sceptical after they go and win the treble in 2013. And they're probably thinking, OK, we know that Pep Guardiola is this very highly thought of coach, more than that, world renowned for all of the work he's done with Barcelona. But to actually go in and overhaul a system which has been so successful and then continue to be so successful with that, I think, look, for example, at the way he's reinvented Philipp Lahm, a man who was seen as a world class right back, but is able to turn him into a world class midfielder as well at quite a late stage in his career. I think that those sort of improvements that he's been able to make individually with players will mean that he still has that respect.
I guess we might not be able to speak about his legacy until we find out what happens in the Champions League this season and if he goes all the way. Bayern very quick, and I thought they played it perfectly from a PR sense. Carlo Ancelotti has been announced as the new man. What are people in Germany thinking? On the face of it, that looks like an excellent appointment.
It does. When Bayern Munich fans think of their last Italian coach, though, they won't have terrific memories, or indeed there was this famous meltdown by Giovanni Trapattoni back in the 90s. However, I think that Carlo Ancelotti will be a better coach than that. And I think that the Bayern Munich fans are saddened by Pep Guardiola going. And I think that says something, because I think from the outside, many people see the fact that he hasn't won the Champions League as a massive failure. But I think that that's not quite the case for Bayern Munich fans. He's really got this relentless sense, the way that Pep Guardiola relentlessly wants to win aligns very much with the way that Bayern Munich relentlessly want to win. Carlo Ancelotti will bring that same sense. I don't know whether he'll bring it with the vigour that Pep Guardiola has, but I think that he plays a different kind of football, and that will actually that will work quite well for Bayern Munich, because it will just continue to keep them one step ahead. But the one thing you would say, the Bundesliga might become more competitive now that Pep Guardiola is going, which is good for the league as a whole. Ancelotti, I think, will have success in Munich, but I think that the league may still open up a little bit more.
And they did beat Hanover 1-0 at the weekend as well, in a rather narrow victory in the end. Archie, just a quick one. Any gut instinct of where you think Guardiola... Where would you see Guardiola... What club would you see getting the best out of Guardiola and vice versa?
My gut instinct says Manchester City, because of, as one of your listeners tweeted in, he does have friends within the club. Mm-hmm. Ferran Soriano and Chiqui Begiristain, two people that he's very close with, or was very close with, at Barcelona as well. Manchester City, I think, have made the biggest moves in terms of looking to accommodate Pep Guardiola. And usually it's managers having to pitch towards clubs. But in the sense of Pep Guardiola, it's clubs having to pitch towards Pep Guardiola. And I think that Manchester City are the club that will probably offer the best proposition, particularly financially, in terms of getting the players in that he wants. That said, it is well known that he very much likes Manchester United, but I don't know whether, given the likes of Soriano and Begiristain being inside Manchester City, I don't know whether he would go to them now, and especially kind of you look at the way that they've been managed in the last few years.
Can't wait to see where he does go. You were at Cologne at the weekend. They beat Dortmund, which wasn't good for the German title race, but a great win for them, and Bayern again 8 points clear at the top.
Borussia Dortmund, after the game, Thomas Tuchel was saying, yeah, it didn't go well, but I think that all in all, it's been a good first half of the season, which you'd have to agree with. But I think that Saturday showed why Bayern Munich are going to win the title, because Borussia Dortmund can't eke out that 1-0 result like Bayern Munich were able to do in Hanover. Their intensity dropped off in the second half, and Cologne, who hadn't scored a goal at home in 8.5 hours, were gifted one by Roman Bürki. I know you'll probably empathise with this situation as well. When you're playing in a game and the ball just bubbles up and you don't expect it, and you hit the ball and it goes straight to the opposition man. The difference is, for Roman Bürki, that happened in front of 50,000 people, and that Simon Zola ran through and equalised. And then after that, Anthony Modeste in the 90th minute went and ended a run of 11 hours without a goal personally. No surprise that both Zola, after ending that run, and Modeste, after ending his run, both ran around wildly, whirling their shirts in the air. I've never seen an atmosphere quite like it in Cologne.
And Archie, recording that wonderful crowd reaction at the end. Archie, I'm sure you've enjoyed covering Cologne this season, considering their atmosphere.
What you can't see on that, I should briefly mention, Rob, as well, is the desolate reaction. I don't think desolate's the right word. The dismay in the reaction of the Dortmund journalist to my right, who just has this empty look, and his face merely seemed to say, why? Why, oh, why, oh, why has this just happened?
It's a poem waiting to happen.
I'm not going to be the one to write it, let's put it that way.
I commentated on Augsburg beating Hamburg 1-0 away at the weekend, and it was an excellent result for Augsburg. In the last five games, they've actually picked up more points than Bayern after one of their worst ever starts to a season, and they're suddenly flying up the table. And in Alexander Esfain, their winger, they have a fine player who was outstanding on the afternoon. And speaking of a surprise package, as Augsburg were last season, Archie, it's Hertha Berlin who are riding high. We talked about this before, and you seem sceptical that they can necessarily hold on for their Champions League spot. What's your view on it now as they go into the winter break in that top four?
I think Pal Dardai, as a coach, was not really seen to be the person who was going to really push them into the top half, let alone into the top four. But he's managed to get the best out of a group of players where you've got the likes of Valentin Stocker, who came from the Swiss Super League from Basel. You've got Roy Behrens, who was very impressive in the Eredivisie. Some of these players are not necessarily in top five European leagues, but experience of playing for bigger clubs outside of that. And he's managed to really kind of knit them together. Salomon Kalou looks revitalised. I know that Lille fans were not very happy with him towards the end, but he's managing to hit the goals as well. And there was one stage last season where they come away from an away game. They'd got a draw, I think it was, on a Friday night. I forget where it was exactly. But the main point of the story was that instead of doing the warm down on the Saturday, Don, I gave the players the weekend off because they went and did the warm down at 2 a.m. when they touched back down in Berlin. Quirky little bit of management by Dardai. I think it shows that an effort to try and do things differently, and that he wants the best for his players. He understands that, I think, as a player, you probably want the weekend off instead of having to come in on a Saturday. But I think that his flexibility in terms of formation this season and being able to get the likes of Salomon Kalou to not just play up front, but be able to play out wide for him as well. I think he's done exceedingly well, but third place, given the likes of Leverkusen, Gladbach, Schalke, Wolfsburg, all behind them, you would expect them to be overtaken in the second half of the season.
Yeah, and Wolfsburg losing to 3-1 to Stuttgart, surprisingly, on Saturday evening. So Bayern top of the table by 8 points going into the winter break. Archie, thanks for coming on the show again, mate. We've really appreciated it.
Thanks, Rob. Thanks, Chris.
For more, head to the website, footballineurope.co.uk.
Chris, time to talk about some Spanish football, and then we'll talk about some of the major headlines from European football at the moment that we haven't discussed. Barcelona are the FIFA World Club Cup champions. They beat River Plate by 3-0, the Argentine side, and it was a case again of the front three just tearing apart their opposition.
No surprise that they won the competition, let's be honest. They seem to take it pretty seriously when they do go out there. Of course, the winners of the Champions League get to play in that competition. Five trophies now in 2015, not bad. Messi scored, Suarez scored twice. That front three is just ridiculous.
It was more of that wonderful combination play. I mean, it seems like that understanding is just getting better.
It does, and that holy grail of winning the Champions League twice in a row. Has there ever been a better chance for someone? I know we used to get to this stage and almost think it every year. I remember thinking it with Real Madrid after they won the Decima with Bale, Benzema and Ronaldo, but that front three is ridiculous.
Back to La Liga then, as Barcelona becoming world champions. Real Madrid beat Rayo Vallecano 10-2. They were a couple of goals short of their biggest ever victory in the league. And for Rayo Vallecano, Chris, and their manager Paco Gemez, it was a very sour day in the end at the Bernabeu.
Yeah, he wasn't happy with the referee, which sounds mad after you've lost 10-2. But they were 2-1 up and then conceded 9 goals. He might have had a point, actually. They got 2 men sent off. The first one...
Fair enough, yeah.
Second one was a second yellow, and it led to a penalty to put Real Madrid 3-2 up. And 9 men, you're in big, big trouble. Happy Christmas to everybody apart from the referee.
No, I think he said especially the referee.
Oh, especially the referee.
He was even a little bit more sinister than that.
Okay, yeah. It was the demolition. Bale got 4, Benzema got 3, Ronaldo got 2, Danilo got the other. But he's an interesting character because remember when he went to Barcelona... away. His thing is, we're not going to change our style.
Yeah, Vallecano will play the way they play, and they always do this.
They had more possession than Barcelona at the Nou Camp, and that hadn't happened.
And they lost 5-2.
I mean, you can't be conceding 15 goals in 2 games, but they would probably have lost those games anyway. I don't mind it.
That's his attitude. He says basically, you know, we're going there, and we're not going to change our style. I think his idea is to reinforce that the way they play is the right way to play this attacking football. And even when they were, you know, 8-2 down, they were still sort of trying to get into the Real Madrid half, not just pump it into the corner and hold out and try and keep the scoreline down.
But the problem is, you lose 10-2, what does that... I get that, but as long as... And you might be able to get over it as a coach, but how much damage does it do to your players?
Well, he was quoted as saying some of his players were in tears after the game or something like that. This is going to sound a bit stupid, but when you're playing against 9 men in your Real Madrid, do you not ease off the throttle?
No, go for it. If you're Benitez and you've been criticised for being too defensive,
they're doing this thing where they absolutely kill teams like Malmo 8-0, wasn't it, in the Champions League, and then
big games though. It's not about beating Rayo Vallecano.
No sympathy, Chris Parrott.
No sympathy. Go for it. Go for the kill. Should have scored more.
Atletico missed the chance to go into the very brief winter break in Spain, top of the table, after a 1-0 loss at Malaga. So Barcelona stay top, and they have that game advantage as well because they've been playing in the World Club Cup. And Gary Neville, what happened with Gary Neville this weekend?
Well, he got a point. Still looking for his first league win. They had to come from behind twice against Getafe. Getafe hit the bar very late on as well and could have won it. So not the best result at home. He would have expected to win that game. And last but not least, the Seville derby, which is one of the games. Real Betis nil, Sevilla nil.
Yeah, sounds something like to a talk classic. About that. Yeah, but it was
12 yellow cards.
12 yellow cards.
Yeah, it started in the 4th minute, ended in the 90th. I think you get a picture of the game.
So Barcelona top level on points with Atletico, but with that game advantage, as I mentioned. Celta Vigo won 2-0 at Granada to our 4th. Villarreal picked up a 2-0 win at Sociedad and a 5th. OK, Chris, let's try something new. We're going to talk about some of the major headlines in European football and a little bit of transfer talk now.
You're listening to Football in Europe.
FIFA President Sepp Blatter and Michel Platini have been banned for 8 years from all football-related activities following an ethics investigation. FIFA's new president to replace Blatter is due to be announced in February.
Saint-Étienne head coach Christophe Galtier has confirmed he wants to sign Loic Remy on loan, but admits he's unsure a deal could be done given the current situation at Chelsea.
Samuel Eto'o has been appointed Antalyaspor joint manager. The striker scored 13 goals in 16 games for the Turkish club. He takes charge until the new year at least.
Swiss side Sion, who played Liverpool in the Europa League, have confirmed they're trying to sign Ronaldinho, who had his contract with Fluminense terminated in September. The former Barcelona star's brother and now agent, Roberto Assis, used to play for Sion, so there's your connection.
You may well have seen this one, but Xabi Alonso, Thomas Müller, Jerome Boateng and Javi Martinez all signed contract extensions at Bayern. Alonso adds another year to 2017. Müller is now a Bayern player until 2021. Should quash some of those rumours of a move to the Premier League.
Litex Lovech have been thrown out of the Bulgarian League after they walked off the pitch in protest during a game with Levski Sofia over what they felt were unfavourable decisions.
And the strike in Greece we talked about last week was called off after the authorities agreed to set up a fund which will help players if their clubs hit financial troubles.
Do you enjoy this headline scene, Chris?
I do, yeah. Although I had
to do
that
music in the background,
to do that last one 3 times. To get it right.
You did. You kept ruining it. So those are your headlines. We'll talk Serie A and French football shortly. But first, let's hear from Belgrade journalist Sonja Nikcevic about Serbian football, and in particular, and this will be of interest to Liverpool fans, their reported new signing, Marko Grujic, the Red Star Belgrade midfielder.
You're listening to Football in Europe.
Grujic has been the standout player for Red Star in what has been an outstanding season for the club. And again, as a Partizan fan, it's really hard for me to say, but they've just been better than any other team in the season so far. And usually it's Partizan and Red Star that kind of are like the two-horse race in the league. But this year, Red Star has just blown every other club out the field, and Grujic has been one of the best players in that team. The thing is, he's really young. He's 19 years old, but he's been playing like mad. He can play in any of the midfield roles, really, but is actually a defensive midfielder more than anything else, but fantastic at going forward and scoring goals. What I think is his biggest advantage is his height. He's good in the air. He's good at bringing the ball down from defense to midfield and attack, and just generally very, very strong at a very young age. He showed that early on in the season, already in the derby that we talked about back in September. And since then, he's only gotten better and better. He scored 5 goals so far, and he's just been outstandingly, inspiringly good in Serbian football at the moment. In Serbian press, it's basically Liverpool is a done deal. And I think that the news that actually came to England came from a couple of our sources here in Belgrade. Apparently, Klopp has had phone conversations with Grujic, but it really seems that Liverpool is the outright leader. And as we know, Liverpool have shown an interest earlier in Serbian players. And Lazar Marković hasn't worked out so far, but he's doing really well in Turkey, so they might want to bring him back as well and kind of have a Serbian duo in midfield. There's always that thought of kind of like bringing the chemistry of two players from the same country in there. There were talks of Anderlecht, who's always also kind of had an eye out for Serbian players, as we know. People have been talking about the 5 million euro or 6 million euro price tag. What's really interesting in this case is that Red Star is in a lot of debt. The club was actually champion two seasons ago, but was kicked out of UEFA competitions or qualifying for UEFA competitions because of the debt. And Red Star, who are going to win the league this season, don't want to see that happening again. And they're very close to that same situation, but Gruic is now seen as kind of like a lifeline, a way out. Red Star have been adamant that they want to be paid right away for Gruic if he's to be sold. And they want to be able to clear up as much of that debt before August and your Champions League qualifying starts. They want to keep him for qualifying for Europe, while they'll probably sell him now in January and try to get the money as soon as possible. He'll be kind of loaned back to the club until the end of the qualifying season. And that was his only basically request. And it's a shame because it's one of those situations where if only he'd stay one season longer, his price tag would have gone up even more. I think he'd be more ready for the international level of football that you have in the biggest leagues. But I think that's just the reality of Serbian football, that you never really have that extra season to let the players develop. And it's something that affects the national team as well.
Do you think that Željko Buvac, who is Jürgen Klopp's assistant, has played some part in attracting the player to Anfield?
For sure. There isn't much of a need to attract anybody to Anfield. I mean, the popularity of Liverpool is actually pretty big in Serbia. It's one of those legendary clubs. But he's definitely played a role in kind of making it go as smoothly as possible.
Can you tell us the latest with Partizan Belgrade, your team, who were knocked out of the Europa League by Augsburg at the end of the group stage, and the situation with the board? Because from what I read, after they lost that game, they just had to avoid losing 3-1, and they did lose 3-1, were knocked out. And then I read that the board all stepped down. So what was the story behind that?
The talk now is that the coach, Drulovic, is going to be sacked at the end of the half season. That would be the fourth coach change in Partizan just in 2015. A tough year for Partizan domestically, and then you kind of put everything into Europe. And Partizan were basically 10 minutes away from qualifying for the Champions League instead of Bate Borisov. How I saw the match against Augsburg was basically a flashback to Bate Borisov back in August.
Right.
Everybody was like, yeah, that's it, we're going through. And even before the match, just the excitement was, it would have been the first time in many, many years that a Serbian club had made it through to kind of like the spring phase, the next year of European competitions. And it would have been a financial injection for the club. It would have been an injection of hope because things were going really bad in the league. I mean, Partizan is currently fourth on the table, 26 points behind Red Star. As a Partizan fan, it's maybe one of the most difficult moments that I've lived through with the club. The board stepping down was a way of acknowledging the fact that things are going very, very wrong. There's a lot of things within the politics of Serbian football that are really hard to understand and that I personally don't understand, but I think it was more of like a statement of things have gone very wrong. We acknowledge that, and we acknowledge that things need to change now.
And Sonia, speaking of change, obviously the qualification for Serbia for the European Championships was utterly bizarre. We had the farcical scenes during the Albania game. Serbia surely would have been hoping to qualify for a 2014 tournament. Has there been any developments about what Serbia are planning to do about qualification for the next major tournament, the World Cup in Russia?
As things stand now, Serbia have done very, very well on a youth level. And Serbia is the under-20 champions, world champions. Compare that, and we're also the under-19 European champions. And when you compare that to the utterly farcical state of the senior national team, it really shows that it is time for change. And that's basically what's been talked about so far. It's still early days since qualification only starts in autumn of next year, but basically the thought is a complete sweep of the current national team, where there's been some tensions between players on who's putting in the effort, who isn't putting in the effort, who kind of like players calling each other out. And I think it's really time for new blood. A lot of the under 20 team, who are the world champions, will be brought into the senior national team with the likes of Gruic, for example, of Andrija Živković from Partizan. These are the players that showed a higher level of maturity playing for the national team than the senior national team did. When you think of it, the names that Serbia has, it's utterly bizarre that they didn't make it to. It's almost a bigger surprise that Serbia didn't make it to the Euros in France than, for example, the Netherlands didn't. While Serbia has some really good names in the team, but are in a difficult place mentally and maturity-wise. So I think that's where we need the change.
For more, head to the website footballineurope.co.uk.
And a big thanks to Sonja Nikcevic for joining us on the show, giving us the latest from the world of Serbian football. Okay, Chris, time to round up everything else. Paris Saint-Germain are now 19 points clear in Ligue 1 after their 3-0 win against Caen. I mean, they look unchallengeable now for that title.
Yeah, they may as well give them the trophy now. New Ligue 1 points record going into the winter break. Second place Monaco are closer to second bottom than they are to Paris Saint-Germain. I mean, Nick, can they go the whole season unbeaten? I think that is the question now. No one's done that in the history of the league. Amazing Zlatan Ibrahimovic goal. Remember that one he scored against Anderlecht in the Champions League when he just hits it? Well, it was similar. Sat up on the half volley. And Angel Di Maria, two goals. He's been assisting a lot recently. And after that start when people criticised him, he's really coming to the fore now. Marco Verratti returned in that game as well after a lengthy spell away. So they only look like they're going to get stronger. And as I mentioned with that Mourinho chat, it is whether they can get beyond the quarterfinals of the Champions League, I think.
So Paris Saint-Germain extend their lead because Angers, who've been one of the surprise packages and high in the table, lost at Saint-Etienne. So Paris Saint-Germain extended their advantage. Lyon, Chris, I mean, things really bleak there at the moment after their Champions League exit as well.
Yeah, of course, they're going into that new stadium, their first game back after the winter break. But Hubert Fournier must be under enormous pressure. Five losses in their last six games, I think, at the weekend. They lost to Gazalec Ajaccio, that tiny Corsican club. Now, it's very tight behind Paris Saint-Germain, so they could easily finish second, you know, if they go on a good run. But ninth is not what they would have wanted. And just finally, Monaco ruined an accumulator I had at the weekend.
You haven't brought up your accumulators for some time, actually, so I'll let you do this.
They drew with Troyes, and they played 87 minutes with 10 men, Troyes. And they're bottom of the table, but Monaco couldn't find a way through.
Okay, Serie A quickly. Chris, seven wins in a row, I think, for Juventus now. And they're suddenly back in the title race.
Oh, absolutely back. 3 points off top spot, would you believe, after that awful start. They beat Carpi 3-2. They were made to work hard. Mario Mandzukic scored twice. He looks the player they signed now. They thought they were signing. Paul Pogba scored as well. Wonder if they're title favourites.
Because, I mean, very possibly, yeah.
You know, they're only 3 points off. They're more than in it. And this after being, what, 10, 11 points behind at one stage in the season?
Yeah, I love Max Allegri taking his jacket off and going absolutely mental when they got the win. Elsewhere, for a manager, things not going so well. Rudy Garcia at Roma. You wonder how long he's going to be in his job because they lost to a Serie B team in the Cup last week. But they got a 2-0 win against Genoa. When Roma did score, the players seemed to be backing Garcia.
Yeah, all went over. It was Alessandro Florenzi's goal. He went over and celebrated with Garcia. Then everybody joined in. Definite public show of unity, I think. And they are still, they're only 4 points off top spot. But I think it's because Juventus started so badly and Roma was seen as the team having finished as runners-up recently that should almost be now getting better and winning the title. And it hasn't gone according to plan. But big win. And after Walter Sabatini, the Roma director in the mix zone, said there'll be no blood today, not that of the coach anyway. So there has been... it's not a ringing endorsement to go into Christmas with. Rudy Garcia, all reports are that his job is on the line, but that's a massive win for them.
Yeah, because elsewhere in Italy at the weekend, Fiorentina beat Chievo and Napoli won at Atalanta. So notable then that Inter, who've been picking up 1-0 wins all season, lose at home 2-1 to Lazio because that suddenly opens up things a little bit again, Chris, in the title race.
Yeah, Roberto Mancini before that defeat to Lazio, who have been awful recently, Lazio, refused to make into the title favourites. Maybe he's right. They're only a point now ahead of the two behind in Fiorentina and Napoli. We've mentioned how close Juventus are as well. Adam Summerton, though, who's a regular, he tweeted in the week, it was very insightful. Last nine Serie A leaders at Christmas have won the Scudetto. Maybe Inter will make it 10, but it's going to be a heck of a fight now because all of those teams will head into the winter break thinking they have a wonderful chance to win the league.
And Massimo Maccheroni scored 2 goals for Empoli in a 3-2 win at Bologna. So he's been in great form, the former Middlesbrough man. But his celebration was like the standout moment, perhaps, from the game.
Yeah, brilliant. Ran over to the stands to a mate and had a sip of his beer.
Thing is, in England, the supporters aren't even allowed a beer.
Well, no.
Let alone the players having a sip.
Well, yeah, you're not allowed to drink in view of the pitch, are you? But yeah. Apparently this was a Bologna fan. So he'd be doubly annoyed. Not only have you just scored against my team, you're now stealing my beer.
Yeah, but wasn't it his mate or something?
Yeah, it was his mate. But if you'd be a bit like, Massimo, I barely want to speak to you after this game as it is.
Chris, OK, so let's a lot of leagues going into the winter break now. Let's just talk very quickly about, explain why the Dutch side Twente are in a lot of trouble.
Remember, Steve McClaren won the title there not that long ago, but they've been banned from European football for 3 years by the Royal Netherlands Football Association.
So they played Tottenham in the Champions League that season, didn't they, in that Inter group? And
been banned by their own FA for deliberately misleading the Football Association about a deal to sell player transfer fee rights to one of those outside investors.
Mm.
Yeah, exactly. And actually, I was looking through the press release, and almost the second part is just as interesting, I think, in terms of the future and other things that might start to come out, because it says the professional license will be revoked if they fail to fully cooperate with an independent investigation into the club's structure. That's almost deeper than, yet this European ban is the headline. But you wonder what more will come out for a club who were at the very top of the Dutch game not very long ago.
So, if you want more on that, I'd certainly recommend, and we have done before, the Benny Foot podcast, the Dutch football podcast as well. So as we're into the winter break in a lot of leagues, Chris, how are things looking around the continent? Who's heading into the next part of the season in a good position?
Well, in Holland, Ajax are top by 3 points. PSV and Feyenoord are just behind them. Portugal, Porto lead the way because Sporting lost at the weekend, and Porto, for all their problems, a top of the table.
Yeah.
It's amazing how quickly it turns around. And as well, we mentioned, Paris Saint-Germain have wrapped up the title, basically. I think Olympiacos have probably done the same in Greece, and Basel have probably done the same in Switzerland. Both of those teams are about 1 billion points ahead.
Yeah, Fenerbahce just ahead in Turkey at the moment as well. And CSKA Moscow at the top of Russia. And Shakhtar Donetsk and Dynamo Kiev level on points in Ukraine. So that might be an interesting title race. Chris, we've got a show next week that's going to sort of be an overview of the season so far. But have you enjoyed doing the podcast this year? Have you enjoyed doing it this season?
Yeah, very much so. Monday mornings haven't quite been the same.
It's been an absolute pleasure. You looking forward to Christmas as well? Are you excited for that?
Yeah, very excited, yeah.
Calm down.
No, going back to the country. Bit of fresh air.
Oh, you're sick of London, are you now?
Yeah.
Complaining.
Maybe, yeah.
So we're going to wish everyone a happy Christmas or a happy holidays?
Yeah, no, happy holidays is too American.
Yeah, but it's inclusive. Everyone have a lovely holiday.
Just have a good Christmas.
Oh, have a good Christmas, everybody. We'll see you very soon.
This is Football in Europe.